It was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the sun was at a perfect angle, lighting the far bank as though it were a stage. The range was a measured 96 yards from the McCann to the bait tree. Ricardo Montero was the finest rifleman that Sean had ever guided on safari. At that range, he could place 3 bullets through the same hole. The lioness mewled seductively, and the lion stood up and followed her out onto the open river bank. He stood behind her, broadside on to the McCann across the river, lit by the golden sunlight. "He's a gift from heaven, Capo," Sean whispered, and tapped Ricardo's shoulder. "Take him." Slowly Ricardo lifted the buttstock of the rifle to his shoulder. It was a .300 Weatherby Magnum. The massive cartridge under the firing pin was loaded with 80 grams of powder and a 180-grain nozzle-partitioned bullet. It would cross the open riverbed at over 3,000 feet per second. When it entered living flesh, it would drive a shock wave ahead of it that would turn the internal organs, lungs, and heart to jelly and suck that jelly out of a massive exit hole, blowing them in a red spray over the grass beyond where the animal stood. "Take him," Sean said, and Ricardo Montero looked through the telescopic sight. The lion's body filled most of the magnified field of the lens. He could see the individual hairs in the dense curling bush of mane and the detail of each sculptured muscle beneath the skin. 1 inch behind the lion's shoulder, on the lateral centre line of its body, was a tiny scar on the sleek side. It was shaped like a horseshoe, a lucky horseshoe, and it made a perfect aiming point. He aligned the crosshairs of the sight on the scar, and they bounced slightly to the elevated beat of his own heart. He took up the slack in the trigger, feeling the final resistance under his finger before the sear released and the rifle fired. Beside her father, Claudia sat rigid with horror. The lion turned his head and looked across the riverbed at her. The mating had touched and moved her deeply. "He's too glorious to die," she thought, and almost without conscious effort, she opened her mouth and screamed with all the strength of her lungs, "Run, damn you, run!" The result stunned even her. She had not believed a living creature could react so swiftly. From lazy immobility, all three animals exploded into flight. They dissolved into golden blurs of movement. The oldest lioness disappeared almost instantaneously into the long grass, with all the cubs rushing after her. The younger lioness raced along the edge of the bank. So swift was her run that she didn't seem to touch the earth. Like a swallow drinking in flight, she skimmed the surface, and the lion followed her. For all his bulk and the dark mass of his mane, he moved as lightly as she did, reaching out those massively muscled legs in full stride. Ricardo Montero swiveled in his chair, the rifle to his shoulder, staring into the brilliant glass lens, swinging with the cat's run. The lioness swerved into the grass and was gone. The lion followed her, but the instant before he disappeared, the report of the Weatherby rifle drove in on their eardrums, painful and deafening. And even in full sunlight, a long tongue of flame flashed out across the riverbed. The lion stumbled in his run, and with a single loud cough vanished into the grass. In the silence, their ears sang with a memory of gunfire, and they stared out at the empty clearing, subdued and appalled.
"Nice work, Ducky," Sean said softly.
"I'm not sorry," she said defiantly, and her father reloaded the rifle with a savage movement that sent the empty brass case spinning and sparkling away in the sunlight. He stood up, rocking the flimsy McCann, and without a glance at his daughter, climbed down the makeshift ladder. Sean picked up his .577 double rifle and followed him down. They stood at the bottom of the tree, and Ricardo unbuttoned the flap of his breast pocket and offered Sean a Havana from his pigskin cigar case. Neither of them usually smoked during the day, but now Sean accepted one and bit off the tip. They lit their cigars and smoked for a while in silence. Then Sean said quietly, "Call your shot, Capo." Ricardo was a marksman of such expertise that he could tell precisely where his bullet had gone the moment after he fired it. Now he hesitated, and then he said grudgingly, "That cat was motoring. I was too quick. I didn't lead him enough." "Gut shot?" Sean asked. "Yeah." Ricardo nodded. "Gut shot." "Shit," said Sean. "Shit, and shit again." They both looked across at the dense stand of long grass and tangled thorny patches of undergrowth on the far bank. It was 10 minutes before the Toyota arrived, summoned by that single gunshot. Job and Shadrach and Matatu were grinning with expectation. They'd hunted 6 safaris with Ricardo Montero, and they had never known him to miss. They jumped out of the Toyota, peered across the river, and their grins faded slowly and were replaced by expressions of deepest gloom as Sean said, "Ntumbu, in the guts." The three of them went back to the Toyota and began to prepare for the follow-up in silence. Sean squinted up at the sun. "Dark in an hour," he said. "We haven't got time to let the wound stiffen." "We could leave him until the morning," Ricardo suggested. "He'll be sick by then." Sean shook his head. "If he dies in there, the hyena will get him. No trophy. Besides which, we can't leave the poor beggar to suffer all night." They fell silent as Claudia climbed down the ladder from the McCann. When she reached ground level, she wouldn't look at them, but tossed back the plait of dark hair over her shoulder defiantly and marched across to the Toyota. She climbed into the front seat and folded her arms across her small breasts, staring ahead grimly. "I'm sorry," Ricardo said. "I've known her for 26 years. I should have guessed she'd pull one like that." "You don't have to come, Capo." Sean did not answer him directly. "Stay with Claudia. I'll go across and get the job done. That's what you pay me for." It was Ricardo's turn to ignore the remark. "I'll carry the Rigby," he said. "Make sure that you're loaded with soft-nose bullets," Sean advised. "Of course." They walked side by side to the Toyota, and Ricardo changed the lighter Weatherby for the big Rigby. He opened the breech to check that there were enough soft-nosed mushrooming bullets in the magazine, then filled the loops on his cartridge belt from a fresh packet. Sean leaned against the side of the Toyota and changed the cartridges in his big double rifle for others from the loops on the breast of his bush jacket. "Poor bloody animal," he said. Although he was looking at Ricardo, he was speaking to Claudia. "It would have been a good, clean kill. But now he's in the grass there, still alive with half his guts shot away. It's the most painful wound there is." He saw the girl wince and her cheek pale. She wouldn't look at him. "We'll be lucky if someone doesn't get killed," Sean went on with ghoulish relish. "It'll probably be Matatu. He has to go ahead on the spoor, and the little beggar always refuses to run. If it's anybody, it'll be Matatu that gets it today." Despite herself, Claudia glanced piteously at the little Ndorobo. "Cut it out, Sean," Ricardo ordered. "She knows how stupid she's been." "Does she?" Sean asked. "I wonder." He snapped the rifle closed. "Okay, Capo, wear your leather jacket. If the lion gets you down, it may protect you a little. Not much, but a little." The three blacks were waiting on the edge of the bank. Job carried the 8-bore shotgun, loaded with buckshot, but the other two were unarmed. It took a peculiar kind of courage to follow a wounded lion into thick cover without carrying a weapon. Even in her agitation, Claudia noticed the trust with which they looked at Sean Courtney. She sensed that they had shared mortal danger so many times before that a peculiar bond united their small, exclusive group. The four of them were closer than brothers, or lovers, and she felt a sting of envy. She had never been that close to another human being in her life. In turn, Sean touched each of them on the shoulder, a light, unsentimental gesture of affirmation, and then he spoke softly to Job. A shadow passed over the Matabili's handsome features, and for a moment it seemed that he might protest, but then he nodded acceptance and crossed to the Toyota, standing guard beside Claudia with a shotgun. Sean held the double-barreled rifle across the crook of his arm as he combed his thick, glossy hair back from his forehead with his fingers, and then bound it up out of his eyes with a strip of plaited leather around his forehead. Even though she loathed him, she found herself admiring the heroic figure he cut as he made these last preparations to face the terrible danger and gruesome death that she had, in a large measure, prepared for him. The sleeves had been cut out of his bush jacket, and he wore short, khaki pants, so that his limbs were bare and tanned. He was even taller than her father, but his waist was slimmer, and his shoulders wider, and he carried the squat, heavy rifle easily in one hand. He glanced across at her, and his gaze was level and green and contemptuous. She was possessed suddenly by a premonition of impending disaster, and she wanted to plead with him not to cross the river, but before she could speak he had turned away. "Ready, capo?" he asked, and Ricardo nodded, holding the Rigby at high port across his chest. His expression was solemn. "All right, let's move out." Sean nodded at Matatu, and the little man led them down the bank. In the riverbed they fell into hunting formation with a tracker leading. Sean followed close behind him, watching the reed bed ahead. Ricardo came next, leaving a gap of 10 paces between them to reduce the confusion in a close-quarter melee, and Shadrach followed him in the drag position. As they crossed, they filled their pockets with smooth, water-worn pebbles from the riverbed. Below the far bank they paused to listen. Then Sean passed Matatu and went up first. He stood alone in the trampled clearing below the bait tree for almost 5 minutes, listening and staring intently into the tall grass beyond. Then he began to lob pebbles into the grass, systematically working the area where the lion had disappeared. The pebbles clattered against other stones or bounced off the stems of shrubs, but there was no challenging growl. Sean whistled softly, and the others scrambled up the bank and fell into their positions, and Sean nodded at Matatu. They went forward slowly. There are many gravestones in Africa, marking the resting places of men who hurried after a wounded lion. Matatu concentrated all his attention on the ground at his feet. He never looked up at the wall of grass ahead. He placed his complete trust in Sean. At the edge of the grass, he hissed softly, and with his hand behind his back made a secretive gesture. "Blood," Sean told Ricardo softly, without looking back at him. "And belly hair." "You were right, capo. It's a gut shot." He could see the wet gleam of blood on the stems of the grass. "Akwendi," he told Matatu, and drew breath like a diver poised on a cliff above a deep and icy pool. He held that breath as he stepped forward, and the tall grass closed around him, limiting his vision like the sinister and murky waters of the pool. The impact of the bullet had been a mighty blow in the lion's flank that slewed him round and numbed his entire body behind his ribcage. Then the grass closed about him as he raced forward, and immediately he felt secure and confident. Within 20 strides he stopped and stood looking back over his shoulder, listening and drawing the scent into his flared nostrils, lashing his tail from side to side. There was no sensation of pain, just a numbness and weight in his entrails as though he had swallowed an ironstone boulder. He smelled his own blood and turned to sniff at his side. The exit wound the bullet had left was the size of an egg cup, and from it oozed blood that was almost tarry black. Mingled with the blood were the liquid contents of his own bowels. They made a tiny pattering sound as they dribbled onto the dry earth beneath him. He licked at the wound, and blood glutted his jaws. Then he lifted his head and listened again. He heard human voices in the distance beyond the river, and he growled softly, feeling his anger begin to mount, associating the blood and the heaviness in his belly with the presence of man.